It's May 26th.
27th.
May 27th, 2015. This is Mary Leslie, and I'm interviewing Duffy Hamilton in Newburgh.
My pioneer ancestors settled, or a great many of them settled in the Tualatin area. There were my great-grandmother, my grandmother, and my mother were all born in Tualatin. That goes from 1866, 1888, and 1907. My great-grandmother was the daughter of Ben Cummins, who had the first store at Bridgeport, which was the forerunner of Tualatin. And his father and mother were Irwin Cummins and Martha Jane Bird Cummins, and there's the donation land claim and the cemetery over in the Stafford area, which was part of the heritage. And there's the onion swamps in Cypole. It's part of it. And as I say, Ben Cummins, the son of Irwin and Martha Jane, was an entrepreneur. He moved his post office and store. Well, it wasn't really a post office. They just dropped it off there to Tualatin when the railroads came, and he was the first storekeeper. The names of my mother's parents were Ethel Shaver Otterstrom and her husband John Otterstrom, who was a product of the French Prairie Swedish people in my line. And I have no memories, and she had all the wrong memories because her father had a mother who died very young, and he was brought up by another French couple, and she assumed that they were the parents, which mixed things up until I got the genealogy straightened out.
So who were the French couple?
Daguerre, and they were from West Woodburn, which was quite a French community. And I guess the Swedish man that jumped the British sloop and was that part of the whole thing spoke French, had a tutor, and knew the language, is why he hooked up with Pelagie Gagnon. And that's a very well-known name in the newspaper business in Canada today. Let's see. The Shaver part of the ancestry is more in the Durham area than Tualatin. They had donation land claims when the widow came with three sons, and everybody took up land.
And who were those people?
The Shavers.
And you know their names?
Elizabeth Elzina Shaver, Francis Shaver, Adam Shaver, that's the direct line that I have, and George, I don't remember if he was George Washington Shaver or if he was the other George Shaver, but they knew, of course, and land abutted the Galbraiths, and we are related through the Cummins to the Galbraiths. And I never knew my grandfather or my great-grandfather in that because they were 1923 and 1927, they died.
And what were their names?
That would be Adam Shaver. It would be Adam Shaver's father. Let's see, I think I mixed up there. Well, anyway, on the other side, it would be my grandmother's first husband before she married Ralph Hedges. That would be John Otterstrom and Charles Shaver. Charles Shaver was the son of Adam Shaver. There I go. And I don't remember hearing too much, except that my mother said that she knew Adam Shaver, the great-grandfather, and he had tuberculosis and had to sleep out on the open porch, which was the treatment of the time for tuberculosis. I just happened to stumble onto the property, not knowing it had belonged to ancestors one time when I stopped to buy some produce in off of Durham Road. And I was quite shocked to find out that the grave site that was there would be my great-grandma's two little boys that died, who have been now reinterred in the Crescent Grove Cemetery in Tigard. All of them that I have mentioned, and several others. In fact, I have 17 direct descendants that came on the Oregon Trail. That's not brothers and sisters, but grandparents and parents of grandparents, that sort of thing. Most of them came in 1852, but some came in 1847. And they all settled, I think, primarily in the Tualatin area to begin with, maybe a short stop in Oregon City, which was usual, especially when they came in the wintertime. And there weren't any particular diaries kept of any of them that I know of, or any tales or anything in particular. I did submit a few articles for the Sons and Daughters of Oregon Pioneers booklet that was made.
So do you know the names of these people who came over in 1852 and 1847?
Do I know their names?
Yes.
Oh, let's see. Yes, I know them, but if I can recall them. As I say, there were the Shavers. There was Elizabeth Elzinia, who was a widow. And three of her sons, my relative Adam Shaver, and his two brothers, George and Francis. There was Martha Jane Bird and Irwin Cummins, who did not come with her parents in the earlier train, but they came later with their own children, Annie and Steuben, or Ben Cummins. There was Martha Jane's, as I mentioned, her parents, the Robert Birds, that would be Robert and Rachel Bird. And I believe her father, William Allen, also was on the train. And this would be the Jordan Sawyer. Jordan Sawyer. And then, not direct, but indirect, the Molly Hedges, who was Ralph Hedges' mother, that was my grandmother's second husband. Her parents, the Fords, Nathaniel and Josephine, I believe, Ford. And they, in turn, were related to the Birds. And I've lost track of all of them. Let's see. I'm missing the Palmateers. That would be Garrett and Sybil. And Sybil's maiden name was, I don't know, I'd have to look it up. and I was fortunate enough to find out someone who had traced that line way back to the 1500s. So I have quite a bit on them,
but they. I saw the Palmateers on one of those donation.
Yeah, that's the one that was Estacada, the town of Estacada. So, whatever, that would probably be Clackamas County. And I'm missing some somewhere. This doesn't apply at all to my father's side of the family because he and his relatives were all from Tennessee. And he just came out because he was in the Navy at the time. And he and my mother met in Vancouver, Washington, because they had a prune festival, which was comparable to present-day Rose Festival. She was a princess, a prune princess, and he was her naval escort on the ship that was in the dock. And they corresponded and married after she got out of high school. But
so when was that? When was the prune festival?
Her years at high school would have been 19, she must have graduated in about 1927. So that would be that and 4 years prior. It must be about 1923 she started.
Mm-hmm.
And she was accomplished on the violin and had earned a scholarship to the University of Washington, a music scholarship. And my grandmother wouldn't let her go because her dad had died and she didn't want her daughter to leave her and go off to college. So I was the first one that went to college, I guess. I lived with my grandma in Tualatin from the age of about 3 and a half, and it has changed and rechanged and changed again, and I'd love to have my grandmother see it now. But it is a city to be commended for their park use and their lovely parks. And of course, all those horrors that I recall, the outhouses and the... We didn't know we were poor, which was probably a good thing. We didn't know there was a depression. Of course, my grandma would, and my great-grandmother, while she was alive, she died just before my 7th or 8th birthday.
What was your great-grandmother's name?
Emma Alice Cummins Shaver. You want me to answer the questions about the family home? It was my grandmother's home.
Sure.
In both cases. And my great-grandma, which I call Grand-Grand, and I shared a bedroom, and my grandmother had a bedroom. And I remember taking her from a nice warm bed, having to go out to the outhouse and just chattering away, and the poor woman was so sleepy and tired. And no, we didn't have a fireplace, but we had a kitchen stove that burned wood with that big water reservoir on the side. And you had to dump in the cold water and then ladle out the hot water. That was for your washing and your bathing and everything. And of course, bathtub in the very beginning was nothing more than a big copper pot. And we did have running water, a pump. They had rearranged the back porch to have an indoor pump and a washer on it, enclosed. But I remember on the second house where Grandma and I lived, after she married Ralph, she bought one of the Galbraith's homes. I believe they had built it for Don Galbraith. And it had indoor plumbing and the whole works. But they had a shallow dug well. And I shudder to think of after the floods, and I experienced two of them as a little girl. Grandma never boiled the water. And here was all that dirty water, I'm sure, sitting down in that well. And the first flood was about, I think, the one of 1937 or in through the mid-30s there. The Hannigan boys and their dad rescued Grandma and I. My great-grand had already died. And we spent Christmas with Charlie Roberts and his wife Mary, because their place wasn't flooded. And it was a very dismal Christmas because Grandma hadn't taken time or made up my dolly clothes for my little Christmas doll. And all I got for Christmas was a naked doll.
So did my grandmother get flooded out too?
She probably would have, because her house wasn't any higher than ours, and we were on the same street.
Uh-huh. But you don't remember what happened during that time?
No. She had kind of a moat around the front and a walk bridge across that ditch-like thing. And so maybe it didn't get into her house like it did ours. Because if I recall correctly, we had to climb out the window to get in the rowboat. I still am not sure if that's a memory that's true or not. And Grandma always had so many, many beautiful flowers in both places where we lived. And the darling Chinaman, Old Hing, that is a Tualatin legend, would come by with a chicken from Mrs. Harding's place, because she had lots of chickens. And somehow he'd come with the chicken, all dressed out to be eaten, not cooked, of course, and would take off down to the next visit with a bundle of Grandma's flowers. And I always watched to try and see what and when and where he picked those. But I guess he must have gotten them picked and tucked away before he came in. But I loved him dearly and would sit on his lap and pull at his hair and had a good time. And I remember my mother thought he was an old man when she was living there. She lived in Tualatin for the first 7 years of her life. And she would run from him and be afraid of him. So it was kind of a difference, a comparison.
Do you remember anything else about Old Hing? Do you remember anything else about Old Hing?
Well, I remember the stories, like the ones in Lois and Karen's books about, I think that's where the story is, of him getting drunk and having, he'd go down to his friends. He was left over from the crew, a railroad crew, that they were all Chinese labor at that point in time. And each week he'd go down, I believe it was weekly, to gamble, which was typical of them, to Portland. And then he'd climb on the train and come back out the Oregon Electric. And one day a new conductor didn't know where he was to put him off, and he ended up in Southern Oregon and walked, I guess, barefoot back the railroad tracks from Medford. He was a legend, and he was a doll, and he was something like you'd walked into the pages of the National Geographic or something, and I was fascinated by him. But thinking of the Oregon Electric, that was the way we got to Portland. This was before bus service, and yeah, I think it came in shortly before 1940. Maybe 1938 or so, we did get bus service. But we'd go to the station, and then we'd have to go into Portland on the train. And our shopping, the main shopping, I remember my grandmother would come back with two big shopping bags of things that she'd gotten from the big open market that's down by what is now McCall Park and all that along the waterfront. There was a humongous building there. And I do believe it later became the Oregon Journal newspaper building. And then, of course, razed after that. And it was fun to go through and wave at and flirt with all the produce suppliers. And if she wanted me out of her way for a few minutes, all she had to do was park me in front of the big thing that made peanut butter. I'd sit there mesmerized while they made peanut butter. And it was much more handy after the buses came and went, because it wasn't such a big walk. And it was after one of our trips to Portland, I think it was for my birthday in January, that we came back and found that my great-grandma was lying there on the kitchen floor, had had a heart attack and died. And I don't know if it was a family thing or if it was something that happened in those days, but I was shuttled off immediately to the neighbors and never knew anything about a funeral or what happened to the body or anything. Much, much different than today's bringing in counselors for everything and giving...
So which neighbor did you go to?
Ray Thornbrew and Martha Thornbrew lived next door to us. And I was to run over there and have him come over and break the window in the back door so that Grandma could get in. But I looked through the glass and saw the body, and of course it's something that was traumatizing. I think I was 7 at the time. And I remember Mr. Thornbrew was a big help when I had my first date in high school. We lived on the other block by then, and the boy that was taking me to the dance got his car as far as their place, and it conked out, so I had to ask Mr. Thornbrew to help us get my boyfriend's car started.
Who was your boyfriend?
His name was Bob Hyde, and this was at Tigard High School. Tualatin students had their choice of Tigard or Sherwood High School, as I think everyone knows. And I was, of course, after the kerosene lamp stage, and we burned in the house. We had an oil heater in the dining room, which heated everything else except the wood stove in the kitchen. And poor Grandma had to do her canning in the summer in the heat by stoking up that wood stove. But I can remember how cold my bedroom was upstairs in the wintertime. There was hardly any insulation and anything in those days. And I got to ride the school bus to school in my high school years, but I had to walk the distance in grade school. I guess I didn't have sense enough to walk on over to where the bus started picking kids up and going. But the Edels, of course, were a prominent family in those days with all the bus service. And I wonder if there's any of them left now. I remember going to Mr. August Edel's funeral at St. Anthony's in Tigard. My grandmother wanted me to go to represent him, and we were allowed to go from school. So some of us gals walked up there for that. It was extremely impressive because it was a very elaborate Catholic ceremony. Very impressive. Lots of times in Tigard, thinking of walking, I would walk home with my horn from school to practice that night. Never practice and drag it back to school the next day. And before that, if Grandma wanted to go visiting anybody, we always walked. Of course, we went up. She would always visit Mrs. Saggart. I believe that was Mrs. Fred Saggart. Or we'd walk here and we'd walk there. And when I worked in the onion fields for Nyberg's, where Fred Meyer is now, I walked there and back. And that was extremely hot and hard work to do. They down on your knees on those hard clay clods, and you hand weeded until the onions got big enough for Zira Nyberg to take the hoe to them. And she didn't trust any of us by hoeing. We had to get down. But she did do me a favor, and as much as she made us wear a long sleeve and a hat. Otherwise, I'd probably have a lot of skin cancer this day. We never had a telephone. My grandma put in a telephone when I went off to school. And the poor dear, I never even called her because we didn't have a telephone on the other end either.
So where did you go to school?
Linfield.
Linfield.
Mm-hmm. Although I finished up many years later at Portland State.
So you were at Portland State when it was at Vanport or downtown?
Downtown.
Oh, because when it moved from Vanport, it became Portland State.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we didn't do much for recreation. My step-grandfather Ralph was a little bit stingy with taking his automobile anywhere. We did go Saturday nights or Friday nights, whatever the movie, outdoor movie was, and in the summertime at Sherwood, that was, they kind of flashed it onto a building and you took your chair and sat there or blanket on the lawn. Once in a while, he would take Grandma to the coast or to Eastern Oregon looking for these Thunder Egg rocks. And
so what kind of movies did you see at the outdoor?
I'm sorry, what?
What kind of movies did you see outdoors?
Well, this was, of course, after... this was sound.
Uh-huh. But I mean, what movies were you watching?
You know, I can't remember a single one of them. I can remember the 5-cent movies when I lived for a year in Multnomah and went to Multnomah Grade School. they had those serials where they had the galloping horses and the cowboys saving fair maidens and... each was a serial, and if you didn't
go... Cobble on Cassidy, or...
Oh, before that.
Before that, oh.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was Tom Mix.
Oh, yeah, Tom Mix.
Mm-hmm. And
Alan Hale was...
Yeah, there was always a gang of us that would get together, and even if you really liked some fella, he made you pay your own 5 cents to go... And that was an experience when I lived in Multnomah. And I also went to grade school 1 year, the 7th grade, in Portland to Mount Tabor Grade School. But other than that, I had my beginning and my ending in Tualatin Grade Schools. And then I decided that I was going to spend all 4 years with Grandma and go to the same school. And left my mother to do whatever she wanted to do. Because I had to move in with her every once in a while when she remarried.
Oh. So your mom was married several times, is that what you're saying? Or your grandma was? Your mom was married 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So who was she all married to?
Well, of course, she started out being married to my father. And
what was his name? What's his name?
Otis Rogers.
Uh-huh.
My maiden name was Rogers. And... she just, when I was about 3 and a half, she decided to leave him. So that was quite a traumatic experience. I wouldn't want to repeat it or go through it again at that age. We got as far as the hotel. We were in Aberdeen, Washington, and got to the hotel that night and then caught a train the next morning to Tualatin.
So where did you start out?
Aberdeen.
Oh, you lived in Aberdeen,
mm-hmm,
with your dad.
Time.
And then you caught the train to Tualatin.
The next day, yeah.
Oh. And did was your grandmother already in Tualatin?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I get it.
And the only other time I remember going down there was I had the mumps and gave her the mumps, and the poor lady was deathly ill.
Now,
I don't think she was very happy to see me. she was stuck with me from then on, yeah.
Huh.
And as I say, my great-grandmother was still alive and living with her at that time. They were both widows.
Uh-huh.
It was quite a few years later that she married Ralph.
Uh-huh. So she'd be in the 1930 census and 1940 census, your great-grandmother and your grandmother.
Mm-hmm. They would be, my great-grandmother must have died, let's see, 35, 36, 37, whatever puts me at age 7 anyway. Mm-hmm. Almost 8. She died in my birthday month, January. And then her sister was Mrs. Mack, mother of Asa Mack, the Tualatin barber. And she died either the year before or the year after. And these were all daughters of Ben Cummins and Corinna Weeks Cummins. Oh, that's another of the ancestors, William Weeks and his wife, and Ruth Vaughn was her name. And Ruth Vaughn's parents, Liberty Vaughn and Nancy Briceland Vaughn. And the Weeks were buried, and probably the graves are completely obliterated now at the junction of the Wilsonville Road and Ladd Hill Road in Sherwood. I uncovered it one time. I was going to go back and improve it, and it's something I never, unfortunately, did. But the two of them and their twin daughters are buried there on what is the Gear donation land claim. The farmer was trying to obliterate it at the time.
So it those graves are gone? Or were they?
I would assume they are.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody ought to do some research on that.
I should pick it back up and complete
you
it.
You and I could go over there and look around.
I think I could find it. It's up a steep hill.
Yeah.
And
let's plan on that.
All right. That sounds like a good plan. And let's see. Corinna had a sister, and that's all. And so I met some of her relatives, and they gave me some correspondence that had been William Wallace Weeks in Illinois. And they were connected to legislators and judges, and so I have almost all farmers in the background, but I can claim them too. But I think there's about 82 letters that are extremely interesting, although they are fading now because the lady's copy machine wasn't too great.
And so you have those?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I ran across the box just the other day.
And you
day.
Might want to have those typed up.
I probably should.
Yeah, I could probably help you with that.
But it's interesting to because they mention the price of a trip on the Mississippi, what the fare is, and what the price of apples are. And
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting to read them. I was very grateful that the lady gave them to me. It asks here about playmates in Tualatin. Of course, Gladys Smith and Fred Smith and I were about the only kids in downtown Tualatin until Andy Buckholz, no, whatever their name was, of the people that bought the tavern. That made four of us, and then there was the camp, Jerry Camp and his little brothers. And then finally Eddie Canning moved in. And before that, Loretta Clow had been there when her mother had the ice cream place that was later a tavern, and her dad had the barber shop. And that was about all there was as far as entrepreneurs in Tualatin at that time, besides the grocery store where Rich's Kitchen ended up and where the BFW and the teriyaki place are now. And we didn't do much in the way of socialization outside of school, and it seemed like neither did the adults. They were all busy farming and making a living, and of course the school was the hub of everything, especially on Christmas and special events like that. And I do remember when I was a first grader being in a school play. Howard Eyeback was my daddy, and I got up there on the stage with my new little nightgown and the scene, and looked out at the audience and thought, I think I just got petrified. But Howard carried it for a few minutes, and I got out of my shock and my trauma, and the play went on. And it was the same thing in my mother's day, because one of her favorite stories is not thinking she was going to get any kind of a gift at Christmas. And Asa Mack, the man I mentioned that was the barber, had put a doll up there for her. And when they called her name, she got so excited that she didn't even put her feet on the floor. She just jumped from the back of one chair to the next till she got up there and claimed her doll. And we'd always get a little stocking and a few nuts and an orange. And in those days, oranges only were plentiful around Christmas time. They weren't an all-year product.
Because it came from California, probably.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the same way bananas were seasonal. And
because the oranges are like, they ripen in December, January time frame. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want me to go through all of this?
Well, I mean, you can go and talk about other subjects that you want to expand on. Is there anything else that you really want to...
Well, I mentioned the trains as our transportation, and I can very definitely remember the depot was about where the little Max Depot is now that runs to Wilsonville, mm-hmm. there by the Sweek House. And that was the train that we took in, although Tualatin is the only city that has a train that runs north and south and east and west and still ends up in the same terminus in Portland. I don't know if that's national or just Oregon, but I know.
Huh.
No, we were beyond the horse and buggy stage, but we might as well have had a... buggy that sat in the garage, because Ralph could have put his car up on blocks as far as often as that went out. And I, of course, he never taught me to drive, so I was probably 22 or 23 when I took lessons from the high school in Tacoma.
So you were in high school in Tacoma too?
No, not me. I was a married woman living in Tacoma.
Oh, that's right. You were 22 or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I met my husband at school, and...
What is his name?
Walt Bowman. And he's been long gone. I think we were married 26 years before he died. He died at 47 in 1974. And 5 years later, I married the best man at my wedding.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we had 23 wonderful years together. And that's Bob Hamilton. Walt was in the medical field, and Bob was a highway engineer. Bob and I had three children, but not the same three children. I mean, he had three girls. But Walt and I had two boys and a girl. And currently they are in Arizona permanently. Trout Lake, Washington, where my daughter lives, next to the Mount Adams Wilderness area. And my son and his wife have retired and live in Otter Rock, Oregon. And I have, they have three grandchildren. My son in Arizona has one grandson and, one grandson and one step-granddaughter. And they're the oldest of my great-grands. They are 14 and 15. They live in Montana. I have a granddaughter and a great-granddaughter living in Silverton, Oregon. And I have a great-grandson and granddaughter living with their parents in Brush Prairie, Washington. And then I have the three step-great-grands and five step-grands. And
they're getting scattered around.
Let's see, it asks here, did you go on a honeymoon? Well, in the first marriage, my husband's wallet was stolen out of the changing room when he went to buy his suit for the wedding with all the money for our honeymoon. So we ended up with an overnight at the coast, Oregon coast. And I didn't do too well at my wedding reception. I was so nervous, I don't think I even showed up. I just waited in the dressing room after I changed my clothes. It was easier the second time around. And both husbands were in the military. My first husband was in the Navy, a rographer, weather person. So he saw a lot of action near over the South Pacific. And Bob was a U.S. Marine and was in the annihilation of several islands in the South Pacific. He was a 2nd Division, and I think they lost about 60 or 70% of the whole division in their battles. I don't have much. I remember the announcement on the radio. I was typically sitting in the living room at Grandma's doing my homework when the announcement was made on the radio, because I always had the radio on. I went in the kitchen to tell Grandma and Ralph what I'd heard, and they didn't really believe me. They couldn't fathom it either. And, of course, a lot of my friends from high school went to war. Well, I spent a lot of money on stamps, writing to gal friends' brothers and my boyfriends and just plain friends. And we lost several from our class to the service.
Do you know who specifically you lost?
Pardon?
Do you know specifically who was lost in World War II?
Oh, well, there was one, my gal friend's brother was so tall. I'm sure that he must have been the best target because he was one of the first ones killed, Vern Weston, Doreen's brother. They lived in Tualatin for a while up the river from the bridge. And who else went right away? Oh, one of my dear friends, Lee Mutter, was killed in the first time his merchant marine ship went out. And there was from Tualatin, Walter John Ames was in the Coast Guard. Don't know that you want to know all these names. Most of them, of course, are deceased now. Mm-hmm. If they weren't killed in the war, they've just died of old age. And I don't know why I'm still around. I'm beginning to wonder. Uh, I really can't talk about a career. I just kind of existed. I married too young and never got a chance to use my teaching my teaching education or journalism or much of anything else. And as I think I mentioned, most of the family were farmers. There was a notation in one of the Hillsborough newspapers many, many, many years ago about my relative, Adam Shaver, quitting his horse racing and going to crush rock for the road, because it was then it mentioned the Galbraiths, and they had a lot of horses too. In fact, they were cheated out of some of their horses. They had a bad start. Almost all of them were died in Independence before their whole group even came. But anyway, those that survived brought this herd of very, very good thoroughbred horses. And it was winter, and they had to stop them off in the Dalles because they couldn't want to bring them on over. They went back in the spring to get them. They'd made arrangements to have them pastured, and the man had sold them. And coincidentally, that name is the same name as a banking in the Dalles later on. But I imagine that's more in Galbraith history than mine. But how we are physically connected together is that one of the Cummins girls married one of the Galbraith fellows because they were had donation land claims side by side. And then when they inherited their share of those lands, they mutually put it together. And in 1959, I think it was, they were given a commendation and a certificate from, or the descendants thereof, were given this certificate by then Governor Hatfield as a century farm. So that land has been in the Galbraith name with the Cummins contributing some of the property for well over 100 years, over 150 probably, if you figure it out. All of this was improved and worked on from way back. And I guess Mr. Irwin Cummins was also a bricklayer and worked on different brick buildings in Portland, would go in, spend the week, and come back for the weekend, in addition to farming. And at one point, one of the stories was that he did one of the buildings in Salem, but I don't know if that's true or not. And I know the story in my husband Walt's family is that the reason the streets are so wide in downtown Salem was his grandfather worked on the chain gang when they were marking off the streets and the amounts. And the fellow working in the thing was too lazy to take a chain and a half for the road, so they made them two chains wide. And that's why they got the wide streets in downtown Salem. They were students at Willamette University at the time. And in his family, they were some of the first graduates of Willamette. And he comes from pioneer stock, too. And my second husband came from Chebig Island, Maine, which doesn't count. That's on the other side of the country. What else?
So I want to hear more about the pioneers that came west. I mean, where did they start out, and why did they come west?
Well, I think with one particular family is, I'm going, do you and the kids want to come too? And in two cases, they were adults and left married children back there in Illinois particularly.
And that, then who are these?
That would be in the Cummins and the Bird family.
Uh-huh.
But I still don't understand how the Birds got here from Illinois, from Knox County, Galesburg, Indiana, Illinois, when they originated in Virginia. And I believe it was Rachel Bird was born at Boone's Fort, Virginia. And Robert Bird, his family had very valuable land there in Virginia. And yet they came from Illinois to Oregon. And I have no connection as to why or how they got there. I know that Cummins came straight across New York to Illinois and then to Oregon. And they, some of them knew each other back in Galesburg in Knox County. And with the Shavers, they go back to Haitian Germans that came to fight for the American side in the Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And they came, let's see, Mr. Shaver died. They lived in Pennsylvania, and he died in Iowa. And then she came west with three sons, and there were grown and married children left behind in her family, too, back there somewhere. And also, when my second cousin did some research on the Shavers, he found in Pennsylvania the Shaver Creek and an area where they had settled back there and lived after the Civil War or the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a relative that we know for sure was a Civil War fighter, because someone has already applied to the DAR mm-hmm. on his, and that was Liberty Vaughn's father, whose name escapes me at the moment. And so, and the Vaughns were the ones that settled more in Lafayette than Tualatin area. And they only got connected from Lafayette to Wilsonville area with the Weeks to Tualatin with the Cummins. And then the Palmateers, of course, came down through Canada, and the Gagnons definitely came through Canada, and they were early fur traders in Oregon, and that was way back before the wagon trains even started coming.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the relatives of the three brothers, not the particular brother that I'm related to, but she had even done research back to the 1500s and traced the French connection, and had visited the family home back in France, and it is now a museum back there.
Wow.
And then there's quite a bit of history I have on the Palmateers. And then, of course, being stupid and young, I never wanted to hear my grandma's stories about pioneers, but just vaguely in the back of my mind, I remember some of the names that she mentioned that I found no particular connection with, but she said we were related to a Judge Tews in Oregon City and various things like that that I haven't really pursued. Or actually, I did my research way back in about 1989, and I have dropped it completely now, and my grandson has picked it up, but he was more interested in the Bowman line than he was.
There's a Tews mentioned in this book that Edie has. It's the pioneers,
mm-hmm.
written around 1900.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of them is a Tews.
Mm-hmm.
that could be, you know.
Well, it's such an unusual name, and yes. You still see it located around Oregon yeah. City.
Yeah, and there's a, my husband's cousin is married to someone named, is his name Andy Tooze? No, Steve Tooze. Hmm. And I keep forgetting to ask if he's related to the Tooze that was
uh-huh.
in that book.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, you just see it every once in a while.
And there's quite a history of the Hedges that stayed in Oregon City. They stayed in Oregon City longer than some of the other pioneers before they came to the Tualatin area. That has a cemetery over out of, well, and be on the south side of the bridge that crosses the river. On down in Kamehameha, Kamehameha, well, I don't know. Anyway, I'd have to look at my notes. My memory is going. At least I haven't gotten it mixed up yet like my mother did. She tried to tell Lois and Karen when she was interviewed that my great-grandmother had brought on her heart attack because of this flood that we had by lifting the heavy stuff up to the height. But she had died the January before the flood in December.
That was your great-grandmother.
My great-grandmother. Yes. Did I say grandmother?
No, you did say it, but I was thinking grandmother, and I was remembering. You must have said great-grandmother.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So your mom had things mixed up.
She did. She, yeah. I corrected her, and she just didn't think so. She passed it by.
But you were there.
Yes,
you
I was there.
It. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, there was just Grandma and I in both floods.
Uh-huh. When was the second flood?
Well, all I can say right now is several years later, because we were already in the other house. And I would be at least 5 years older. And that flood just got up to the front door. It was really a small porch with a door that went into the living room and a door that went into the dining room. Well, it just seeped under the door that we didn't use that mm-hmm. went into the living room and went under my piano.
Oh, no.
Enough to wreck it.
Oh, sure.
And that was all the damage there, but I guess the water did get in the house in the first time.
Uh-huh. So that would have been like around 1940 or something like that?
No, it'd still be in the 1930s.
Oh, it would, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or the first one was 1932, you said?
No, it was about 1936, 7. I would say guessing 1937, but I'm not really uh-huh. positive.
That was the first one?
That was the first one I was in.
And the second one was?
Several years later.
Okay.
Because I think it was 1939 that was the really deep snow that we had. We had a snow so deep that it came up to my grandmother's porch, and this fellow from way down below where the Stonehenge apartments are now walked up to play in the snow with me, and we built a fort that we could stand up in.
Huh.
Of course, we were not big kids, but we could still stand up inside that igloo that we made. And that there was some cold winters, but that was the only really horrible winter. But we didn't experience the ones like they did in the 1800s where the Willamette River froze over and things like that.
Now, the Columbia River froze over, it must have been in the 1940s, because my parents were living in North Portland, and there was this hill where my parents used to live in the place that's now Kenton Park. And there's a big hill that, you know, you go down, and my dad had forgotten his lunch. So my mom slid his lunch pail down that. There was a huge hill, but that year they were able to drive across the Columbia River. It must have been the 1940s.
Oh, I can't remember that. Let's see, the 1940s. I got out of grade school in 42. High school. There wasn't any time that the school bus ever didn't get us to school.
Maybe it was just super cold. Maybe there was just ice on the ground and not really that much snow, and it was so super cold that the river froze over, and it probably wasn't, maybe minimal snow.
Yeah, yeah.
It could have been it had just been wet and the ice froze over and the lunch pail slid down the hill. It could have, you know, you don't have to have cold weather and have snow with it.
That's true, yeah.
So ice, it could have been.
Ice storms are worse.
Yes, they are.
I was trying to remember the year I was in grade school in Portland. In my seventh grade year, that would be 1941. I still walked to school. It was always a long walk to school. Of course, it's always uphill, too. You're always going to school uphill.
Yeah.
I remember there's a guy named Darwin Lee, who is the older brother of Lois's first husband.
Uh-huh.
He used to ride me home from school in the eighth grade on his handlebars, and that was downhill, and we went pretty fast.
I bet. That would have been scary.
Yeah, around that corner. And, there was the article I wrote about just adoring the August and Mrs. Blank's, that were the caregivers. They cleaned the building of the old school in Tualatin, mm-hmm. that became the apartments later on. And they lived right there at that steep curve that swung down around. And she caught me trying to steal her grapes one time. But for one whole year, they really were my grandparents. My mother was married to their older son.
Oh, really?
And that's when I lived in Multnomah. And I got a little doggie from them that the younger son had come home drunk one night and chopped the tails off of the puppies.
Oh, no.
And so he had this little stub of a tail, and he was born with only three legs. Something was deformed in his leg, and Mrs. Blank said that he... the mother had chewed the paw and the part off, so he had this little stub. He got along beautifully on three legs, except once in a while it would swing into a step when he went up,
mm-hmm.
and the nerve endings would get hit, and he'd yip.
Oh.
But he was only about like that. Uh-huh. I called him Peg Leg Pete. So they contributed a lot to my childhood, and especially the year that I could really claim them as grandparents, because all the kids in school claimed Grandma and Grandpa Blank.
Uh-huh.
And I understand that the name came because when they came into Ellis Island, or maybe it was prior to Ellis even, they couldn't get them to understand their German, to spell their name.
Uh-huh.
So it was just Blank. I don't know if that's true or not.
So were they from like... There's a lot of German dialects. There's one that's Plattdeutsch in northern Germany.
I have no idea just what part of Germany.
And then there's a southern part of Germany near Austria, and that's different.
Uh-huh.
But there's many dialects.
Oh, yeah.
But those are the two big ones that are still around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, my stepdad, Joe Durst, was from the Swiss part that's nearest the German border in that little hook right there of Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And he, of course, understood German and Swiss.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how old he was when he came to the United States. But that was Mother's fifth husband.
Oh, fifth husband.
Yeah.
Boy.
I don't know how long they really would have lived and married, because he died. He was the only one who died.
Uh-huh.
All the other marriages only lasted a year.
Wow.
I mean, I really, just 1 year.
Jeez. So, Were there any more children, or were you the only child?
No, I was an only child.
Wow.
That's why I'm a spoiled brat. My first husband told me that was why.
Oh, really?
Never learned to give and take. I had always wanted a little brother, but I think under the circumstances, it was very fortunate that there wasn't one.
Probably.
I had at one time, well, this Al Blank had college-age kids. In fact, I think that's why I chose Linfield, is because I went with him taking back the daughter to school one time. The first and only time I ever met her, mm-hmm. He took her back, and I was in the back seat, and I was really impressed with it at night while we got there. Mm-hmm. And his son was extremely sweet guy, and he came to see me even when I had my tonsils out, which is a dirty trick to play on kids. They say, oh, you can have all the ice cream you want, and it hurts so darn bad that you don't take any ice cream. And one marriage, the one when I went to Mount Tabor grade school, there was a daughter that was my age and two boys that went to Benson High. And so I had a family for a year. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what I would be like if I hadn't had my grandma. Bless her heart, she took a lot.
So you just lived over in the Mount Tabor area for a year, is that
mm-hmm. right? Okay. 52nd and Flanders.
With your mom and her...
That husband.
One of her husbands.
Yeah, we moved into his house, and I had a bedroom with the gal that was my age. The boys slept in the basement, and then there was another bedroom. But there's one bathroom for all of these people, and teenage boys and two girls, seventh graders. And his favorite thing to do was take the newspaper and sit there until he'd finished the darn thing. That was worse than having an outhouse, because at least you stand around and yell at them.
True.
But it was a strange life. Let's see, about the pioneers, though. I don't know. Any questions?
So most of your ancestors, they some of them were from Virginia, but they started out in Illinois.
They came west from Illinois, yeah. Uh-huh. And how that transition from Virginia?
Well, you know, Abraham Lincoln came from, I can't remember where. But he ended up in Illinois, right?
Well, Illinois, Kentucky, and maybe parts of Indiana all claim him. Because when I went back to visit the kids in Indiana, they took me to to Nancy Hanks' place and to the
was
Lincoln Park.
Was that his girlfriend or his mother?
Hmm?
Was Hanks his mother? Or?
His mother, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
but yeah, he was all around that area.
I can't remember where he spent his youth. But as I say, all three states kind of pretty much claim
him. I think he was in Kentucky. I remember.
When he was a lawyer, I know he was in Illinois. But that must have been his later years.
Yeah.
I should know my history better than that.
I'm sure they do in those states.
I don't know the way they study history these days and how they slough off geography.
Yeah, I know. I never learned anything about geography when I was going to school. It's like, they just skip that. It's like, wasn't that important?
Well, you've got to know that there's oil in Venezuela for some reason or other.
Sure.
No, I think they should go back and get a few more basics in. These kids that have done nothing but commute on a computer, don't even know how to write out a whole word, let alone a sentence. I mean, you are is you are.
But you know, they're saying that the people who do that are better writers than people who don't write at all.
Not handwriting.
No, they're actually better. You know, like their printing is better than kids who don't even do computer at all.
Oh, I never learned to print. They didn't teach printing.
Well, you know, they don't teach writing anymore.
Yeah.
They teach printing because nobody can read people's handwriting, so they're just doing away with it. Because you know, they have people write in those boxes. That's so they can read your letters. You know, because nobody can read. You know, if you take the time and write really nice, that's great. But if you don't, you need to just print it.
Well, I don't know. I think cursive writing is it's a lost art. But to me, it's the only way to go. And we studied the little circles with the little ups and downs in the middle of them. And we spent many hours with our so many elbow this way and. What's wrong with that? Yeah, they've got too many other things to do now. And then that gives them too much leisure time. They can't go out and work, like in the strawberry fields and things.
I know. When we were kids, the people are my age, they all talk about working, you know, picking berries, picking beans.
Oh, yes.
You know, everybody talks about it. But at some point, they decided that they needed to pay minimum wage.
Well, they made the rule first that nobody under 12 could go out and do it. But I wouldn't have had school clothes if I hadn't been able to
go
either.
Out. Yeah. I think I started going out when I was 13 or something like that. But that's how I bought my school clothes was, you know.
Well, I was out long before then. I think I was probably 8 when I started. And there was a lot more fields than you can hardly find fields to pick in nowadays, but there was the Burgesses in Sherwood that had fields, and Nellie Wish, the teacher at Tigard High School, always had cherry picking, hop picking, and then she'd go down on the bus, you know, the story about her going down to pick up the buns, the bums.
Oh, really?
On Burnside, take them back in this bus. After she paid them day by day, and delivered them back there that night. I picked cherries for her for half a day, and that was all I could take with all that juice running down my elbows. And I picked hops for a half a day, too. And they scratched.
Oh, really? Oh, they got stickers.
Even with gloves and a shirt, long sleeve shirt on, they scratched.
So where did you pick?
Let's see, I went with my grandma because she did a lot of that. She had to scrimp and save and scrub to get her money. I mean, money was very scarce. She pretty much lived on her deceased husband's insurance. But let's see, where did we go? I don't think it was for Nellie. Somewhere not too far, but families before that, they'd take a tent and supplies and go on the train and go down Southern Oregon more.
Well, Edie said that her parents owned a farm, and it was between Butteville and Wilsonville, and their hop field was next to the Oregon Electric line. And people would come out with their camping gear, set up camp in you know, at the edge of that field, and then they would pick the hops for that family.
Yeah, they were just like migrant workers were a few years ago. Only
they would just follow the seasonal jobs. But my grandma, my mother says she used to pick hops. So when you picked hops, did you see my family out there?
I wasn't seeing much of anything. I was just kind of cursing because I was there. I can't remember that we ever picked in the same place or not. Because I sure as heck would know them.
You're right. My mom talking about going.
That's a good
hops
question.
I don't know if it was. Before she married Ambrose Smith, or You know, it could have been, she could have been, they could have done this in the mid-1920s. And,
oh,
until,
yeah. Well, I think at Hopmere and, what's the little where there's that good pie shop where you turn off the highway on the way to West Salem on I-5. There's a big hop field there, and that's uh-huh. about the only one that you really see anymore. Uh-huh. Somebody the other day was asking me, what is that in Oregon that where they've got all those poles and wires up and these little plants are starting? That's the strangest thing, but they weren't from Oregon. Oh, there were so many areas that are now nothing but houses that were places where you could get tomatoes or peaches or cucumbers, anything you wanted to pick. Mm-hmm. Like right there, that whole intersection on Allen Avenue where Murray and Allen is uh-huh, a big right. Safeway and all that. Mm-hmm. That all used to be orchards and farmland that you could go and get produce. Now there's no such thing. That's probably why the little open markets during the summer are so popular.
Yeah, because it's hard to...
That's it, yeah.
It's hard to find those places. We went out to go to get strawberries on... it was near Al's, you know, Shoals, Roy Rogers area, you know.
Yeah.
And that place called Grandma's. 2 years ago, I went out and picked Hood strawberries there at that corner. And we went out about a week and a half ago. Or no, it was just last Friday. And we stopped at Al's and said, well, what happened to this place? I thought that was the place, and they weren't having open signs. And, oh, well, that place was sold, like, in the last 6 months, so they weren't having anybody, you know, mm-hmm. you picking.
Well, where I lived on Shoals Ferry Road, before it meets Murray there, all of that, as soon as the fir trees stopped, all that was a strawberry field. And then over where all of the, this is when I was driving back and forth when I worked at the clinic, where there's apartments and houses and things on Shoals, on down toward West Washington Square. Mm. Nothing but Black Angus cattle.
Wow.
And when we bought our property on Shoals Ferry Road, it was a graveled two-lane road. Now it's five lanes.
Wow.
Yeah. Right in front of the same house.
Huh.
It's just shock every time I go by there. I keep forgetting to look because I think, I didn't live here. But you could change the oil in your own car like you can't anymore because of all the punches and the transmissions and things. And so we deliberately save any oil or any oil we could get from other people that changed their oil in their cars to pour on that gravel to keep it from choking our trees.
Oh, that's interesting.
The dust would just roll up there. And we bought that property in 60... Well, we bought it in 63, yeah. October storm was 62. And it took up a lot of the trees.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Do you remember that storm?
Oh, do I remember that storm.
What was happening when you...
Well, we were living on 55th, and the kids were going to grade school at Edwin Markham. And their grandparents were coming up to visit, so I had deliberately early made a big pot of spaghetti and things. And Mr. Bowman drove up from Corvallis to the hill there where we lived. And I said, well, didn't you notice that it was windy? He said, well, I thought we were making pretty good time. But they pretty much turned around and went back again because they just wanted to get back. They had a lot of acreage in the mountains in the valley between Newport and Corvallis. Mm. But the neighbor's roof blew off and broke our bedroom window. And the people, two houses up the hill, had their roof lift off, turned sideways, and just lay between fir trees, just as perfect as if you took a crane and did it.
Huh.
And there's a lot of damage because it's rather a, well, it's the hill that Portland Community College is on, Mount Sylvania.
Oh.
That's where the house was. And we faced, of course, we faced I-5 and everything to the south. And I believe our strongest gust was over 100. It was either 106 or 116. It was the same one that broke the gauge on the Morrison Street Bridge. I remember that. And we, of course, sitting at the tail end of Multnomah County, the tail end of Washington County, and the beginning of Clackamas County, nobody cared if we got hooked up to electricity or not. And so we were over a week without electricity. And I was going to Portland State, and the kids were teenagers going to late grade school and high school. And we'd sit around the dining room table to study at night. And it was their dad's job to come by and pump up the gas lantern, our camping lantern, so we could see to study. And we had to take baths by a great big Jeep can in the side of the fireplaces and kept fireplaces going so that we could all take baths.
Huh.
And I don't know, some of the kids at Portland State probably didn't want to sit by me because he didn't get a turn very often. Too much trouble. You know, kind of like the old days where you ladled it out of their reservoir.
So did your house get a lot of damage to it from that storm?
Well, aside from the broken window and a bunch of punctures in the siding, not too much, really. Not like the house below us and the house way up at the top. And the ones on the other side of the road, there were two up there. They didn't sustain any damage.
Huh.
Apparently it came on our side of the road.
Uh-huh. That big gust?
Mm-hmm. It was just open all the way back to the rest stop at Wilsonville, practically. That sweep of wind came in.
Huh.
But I fed the Bowmans and they took off. And I did a lot of cooking in the fireplace that week. It was kind of fun. That was a long way from Tualatin. When I left for college, I actually didn't have any connection with Tualatin again until I joined the Historical Society.
Really?
I lived close for a while there in Tigard, in Summerfield,
mm-hmm.
and finally went back to church in Tualatin. But of course, I left my heart in that little brown church. I thought they wrote that song, the little church in the valley. Well, church in the valley.
Uh-huh.
I thought they wrote it just especially for that little church. And we had a youth group and a youth group in the Grange, and tried to keep active and social, but in those days the kids were busy.
Mm-hmm.
Like when in way back in grade school, after we moved out of the old building and had the WPA building, that was when I was about a fifth grader, I think, we had the new one that's been cleared out for Marquise now. They had no lunches or anything yet there. And so the women would bring in the food and make it and things. And a lot of kids brought their lunch. And of course, there, a lot of people, especially out in the Norwood area, had chickens. And it would be a lot of eggs, boiled eggs and egg sandwiches and stuff. And that smelled a lot. I hate that smell. But we got through it. Had some great teachers. I was out of school. No, I was It couldn't have been. I must have been out of school when Mrs. Cole, or Miss Cole, Beatrice Cole was the principal there. She's been written up in the books a lot because Mr. Engelbretson was our principal. Did you ever hit your principal over the head with a baseball bat?
Nope.
I did.
Why?
I had special orders to put the bat back when the girls came up from their play exercise deal. Uh-huh. Put it back. So I was on the process of doing that. And he says, here, I'll take it for the boys. I said, no, I'm supposed to take it, put it back.
Oh, no.
And he got a little angry with me. And one of the other of us bent over to get a drink out of the fountain. And he grabbed it. And I went like this and whacked him in the head.
No.
He got very angry, but he didn't say anything because I was trying to do what I was told. That old school building was a institution in itself. I didn't go there. I think the last high school class was about 1935.
Mm-hmm. And my mother was.
And I was in after that was disbanded. I can't think of anything. What do you need to know?
I was going to ask you about something.
Oh, Ralph's car was a 1927 Chevy. A square little thing.
The one he never drove?
I never drove. He never drove.
Wonder what it was for. Books?
Oh, they went. The highlight of Grandma's whole year would be she paid cash for everything. There was no such things as checks. And he'd have to get the car out and take her over to Hillsboro to pay the yearly taxes.
How much were they?
I have no idea.
Oh, you don't know?
But I do know she only paid $15 for the deed to the 8 cemetery plots at Winona.
Oh, wow.
In 1923. You surely don't need any more, do you?
I don't know, unless you can think of anything else. Probably just about done, huh?
I'm done. Well, the only character I remember in Tualatin was Wayne Lundy, Orville's brother. Well, he had his sister Fern, too. But he was a chubby little fella and always wore bib overalls. And the feed store was between the brick store and the tavern. And it had this high thing that where you could back up and get your stuff loaded on directly. So it was quite a ledge there. And this chubby little fellow with his little legs swinging. Every time you went by the feed store, Wayne was sitting there. I guess he became quite a town character after I left. But I remember as just a Tweedledum and Tweedledee type thing. And Orville, his brother, was in my class in school. And Fern was older and always sat on the high steps to their porch next to Shimoni's down across the street from Grandma's and down. And she was always out there in a tight skirt waving at everybody that went by.